when we have a V2G car, so a car that can also discharge into the grid, then we increase the flexibility provided by this asset significantly. It's a very small change on the technical side. So from a cost perspective, from a weight perspective, volumetric, it's minimal additions in the car, but it boosts the flexibility, especially when you have EVs that stand for a longer period of time. Because when you have charged a car once, the power is gone, the flexibility is gone when you cannot discharge it. So it really increases the flexibility significantly and therefore also the value.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back for another installment of Transmission. Today's episode is with Raphael Hollinger, Chief Data Officer at Mobility House. The conversation covers how vehicle-to-grid technology enables electric cars to be flexible assets to the grid and the opportunities that open up with increased market access. As always, if you are enjoying the podcast, please hit subscribe wherever you're listening so you never miss an episode. And if you've got any topics you'd like to hear discussed, please get in touch. We'd love to hear them. Let's jump in.
Hello and welcome to another episode of Transmission. Today, I'm joined by Raphael from Mobility House. Raphael, welcome.
Thanks.
And we're going to be talking about the role of EVs in the future energy system. And before we kind of talk about who Mobility House are and kind of your role within Mobility House, I'd like us to kind of do a little bit of a thought exercise here, right? So if you fast forward 10 years from now, like what's your perfect vision for how electric vehicles are operating in mobility and in the energy space?
Yeah. So I'm sure we are talking about zero when we talk about the time in 10 years at the Mobility House. So the vision is that we can drive for free, that we have free charging because the battery in the car can be used as a flexibility asset and earn its money or the energy necessary for driving by providing this flexibility service to the electrical energy system.
Okay. And in terms of like, so that as a concept, right, being able to drive for free because your EV is giving you that flexibility to the system, like what are the things that are stopping us from getting there?
I think in many countries we are in a good way. So what you need is a smart meter. So you need to be able to see the change in charging or maybe the change in discharging in a high resolution in your balancing group to be able to trade the energy and provide the flexibility beyond ancillary services or DSO services. I think that's a very important step. We need a communication infrastructure, so we need to be able to communicate with the EV driver to get flexibility provision. You can use an app or a UI in the car, and you need, of course, the possibility to change the charging power, to adopt the charging via the charger or via the car.
Okay, so you need the sort of total system in terms of being able to see what the systems are doing, be able to control the systems, to be able to make money from it in order to pay for that charging. So that's kind of one big set of challenges. What are the things that will enable us to go faster to sort of meet that? You said 0-0 vision, right? So could you also explain what 0-0 means?
So the first zero, let's say, means money. So that you can charge your car for free, and this is only possible if there is a high flexibility need in the system you are operating, because then the flexibility has a high value, and you need to have regulations that allow you with this distributed resources to provide this flexibility. And for example, in Germany, and I think also in UK, we have some challenges with double taxation in this distributed case, especially also in stationary applications in many countries. So there are many details in the regulations that are not perfectly suited for what we do, but in most countries it's possible, and so we can do first steps in this direction. The second zero stands for zero emissions. So in a system where you have high costs for emissions, for example, because of high CO2 taxation, what you do with the flexibility will also lead to a very, or to the to the case that the flexibility is valuable for the system to reduce CO2 emissions. So it's okay. The goal or the vision is zero emission charging. And obviously for this, we need high shares of renewable.
It'd be good to ask about what the key challenges are in terms of, we've talked a little bit about what enables this, but then also what the key challenges are in terms of getting there. But I would also, before we do the key challenges, I would love to ask about this kind of concept of being able to do something for free, right? We've all heard the expression, you know, there's no such thing as a free lunch.
Yeah.
So maybe just to dig into that, what does that zero look like? You're saying, as someone who owns a battery asset, there's value from that asset in terms of being able to provide services to the grid, and that is value for the asset. And what you're going to do is you're going to take that value and match that with a charge profile for the battery, and then those two things will net off to something which kind of gets to zero. Is that more or less how you envisage it working?
Yes. So when you imagine the value or the investment into batteries that are in cars, this is a huge investment nobody could take for a storage built as a flexibility asset only in our energy systems. So we have huge investments into these batteries that are in cars, and we use them only 5% of the time. So 95% of the time, cars are standing around and are a dead asset or even annoying people on the streets. So I think we can make this a valuable time and a valuable investment. And therefore, we have this, yeah, as you said, so we can compensate the costs with the value of the 95% of the time.
Mm-hmm. Okay, and maybe then let's talk about the challenges, right? So what are the challenges that you see preventing this kind of zero-zero vision?
At the moment, we have cars that can be charged depending on price signals, for example. So we do have the technical capabilities. We have the, in UK, the half hourly resolute measurement with a smart meter. And with this, we can already reduce the costs of charging significantly. When we have a V2G car, so a car that can also discharge into the grid, then we increase the flexibility provided by this asset significantly. It's a very small change on the technical side. So from a cost perspective, from a weight perspective, volumetric, it's minimal additions in the car, but it boosts the flexibility, especially when you have EVs that stand for a longer period of time. Because when you have charged a car once, the power is gone, the flexibility is gone when you cannot discharge it. Mm. So it really increases the flexibility significantly and therefore also the value.
Yeah, I think it's interesting to kind of compare that alongside the stationary storage space, right? Because they're both kind of in the same market. And I know that we can kind of come onto this later, but mobility has to do a little bit of both.
Mm-hmm.
But you've got this in the UK, when we look at the future of energy storage, we see there being, say, 50 gigawatts of stationary storage by the time it gets 2050. And so this need for frequency response, by the time it gets 2050, we might need 10 gigawatts of it. So imagine we've got a 50 gig fleet that's stationary that can do bidirectional charging and discharging. And you've also got a need for, say, 10 gigs of frequency response. The stationary storage market is way big enough to deal with that. And so maybe one challenge would be, well, do we actually need to use vehicles to do the V2G or so the vehicle to grid, as you say, so the ability for cars to be able to charge and discharge, or, and I think I read this on your website, V1G, which I've never heard before, V1G, which is just, you're describing that as kind of just a singular, just charge from the grid into the system. And so my question to you is, given the size of the stationary storage market, do we actually need V2G from that vehicle, from the vehicle fleet?
Yes, that's a very good question. So first, looking at the ancillary services. So in Central Europe, at least, most stationary applications are active in the frequency containment reserve. So fast response to frequency deviations. And these markets are very small in size. In Germany, so the German TSOs are responsible for, I think, 640 megawatt of tender of this service. Okay. And we already have sufficient amount of stationary applications, so grid scale stationary applications, to provide this service. And therefore, there is pressure on the price and the market. I think you see equal situation in Great Britain at the moment. With cars, I do not strive towards these services immediately, because pre-qualification is a pain and rules are really not made for this very small assets, and they might also not be the best fit for this service. Therefore, what we believe is the value in the wholesale markets. So we really believed already early that short-term trading is a very important revenue stream for also for stationary applications, and started already in 2019 with short-term trading with our stationary applications. And we could practice how this works, how the asset behaves, and where the value lies in. And today we are able to use the same concepts on the EVs. And this market obviously is much bigger in size and volumes, and we will see a lot of value also in these markets in the future with more and more renewables and higher CO2 prices.
Okay, and let's put a note to come back to the German energy market. We're going to revisit that later on, and we're going to talk about how that market has been transitioning and kind of what the key challenges are within it. Because being a podcast that focused quite a lot on the UK but also US markets, it would also be nice to kind of be able to shine a light on the transition in Germany. But if we could just kind of focus on that V2G case, you mentioned that we could be going into wholesale markets. Could you kind of just talk through some of the high level economics of that? So let's say you have a car that you are able to take into a wholesale market. If I have a car, what does the kind of rate of return look like for me if I'm able to put my car into a V2G application?
Yes. So we did a very interesting field test with a stationary application. So in these days, we only had stationary applications and no V2G cars. It was 2022. And we used one of our stationary soldiers, only 1 megawatt in size, built from 18 Audi e-tron batteries. And we operated them in a way as if they would be EVs driving around. So there were times where we are slowly discharging the battery and simulating driving. And there were times where we assumed the car to be blocked, and we simulated a V1G time and a V2G time. So being able to discharge for trading or only charging in the trading or plug-in times. And we did this for 3 months each. And in 2022, the prices were pretty intense. Let's say volatility prices were very high. But the advantage of what we did with our short-term trading charging as compared to immediate charging was more than 700 euros for V1G, so only the charging case, and more than 1,500 euros per EV per year for the V2G car. Okay. So when you then take levies and taxes and grid charges on the bill, then this would mean to have half the costs for charging in the V1G case and zero costs for charging in the V2G case already. So this 2022 phase maybe was a glimpse into the future of volatility in short-term market prices. And we could prove that 0-0 is possible already today.
Okay, and just kind of making you the kind of the personal investor. So you're buying an Audi e-tron, right? You're the person who's going to commit to, and I'm going to guess at a price, let's say 50,000 euros to buy this car.
Yeah.
Don't know if that's the right number or not. Did not do a research on the e-tron price, but the £50,000.
Yes, it's a cheap one.
It's a cheap one. Okay, it's a cheap one. Great. Well, they can get in touch with me and they can sell me an e-tron at that price if they want to. So you're looking to buy that, and then someone comes to you and says, okay, you're going to have charging costs, and your charging costs, as you said, to get to 0-0, you might need to get, say, 1,500 euros back from V2G. So someone comes to you and says, all right, if I put this extra thing onto your site, I can save you £1,500 per year, €1,500 sorry, per year. But I need to use your battery.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to borrow your battery for a bit. You've just invested 60,000, 70,000 euros into a car, and then someone's saying, "Ah, just trust me, I'm going to use your battery for a bit. You won't notice it." How do you build trust to get people and fleet owners and private investors to be able to say, "Yes, okay, don't worry, you can use my battery"? Because what they'll be worried about is Are they going to use all the range on it? Are they going to use the state of health? Am I going to have to go and buy another 20,000 euro battery because it's been, you know, overworked?
Yes, very good question. Obviously, that's something we are looking into intensely. We made some research with the university in Munich, and the result of this research showed that immediate charging is not necessarily does not lead to less degradation than V2G when you have degradation in mind. So you need to manage this degradation topic. Then you can even be better than immediate charging with a V2G application. Obviously, if you do intense trading, using the whole battery in the extreme SOC ranges, for example, having a lot of cycles, this will degrade the battery, or might degrade the battery stronger than battery charged immediately for driving. That's also possible. So you have to take care of it. Then we are talking a lot to the OEMs, to the warranty provider of the battery in front of the end customer, and defining together with them the rules we are able to use the battery in, or the limits we are able to use the battery in. So normally we design certain SOC thresholds and cycles, and that's full cycle equivalence including the driving. So a driver who only charges or has a lot of fast charging on the German Autobahn and drives very fast and long distance might have less value, less flexibility for us. But we can see these cycles in our communication with the car and then trade less aggressive with this physical asset and use another battery in our portfolio if we need to have a physical fulfillment of a trade.
Yeah, I think it's just it's a fascinating kind of look into the future, right? That you will have some smart dispatcher / portfolio analysis that's looking at the usage of each of these EVs and working out where they can get the best value from those EVs. So I'm fascinated by that. But let's just go back a touch onto some of the things you were running through. So OEM, original equipment manufacturer. So that is someone who has kind of made the cell or put the car together. So anyone thinking, what on earth does OEM mean? And then the other part you were just mentioning, so let's talk through the kind of concept of the degradation on an immediate charge versus using V2G. So to someone outside of that, you'd think, well, V2G, I both need to charge and I need to discharge. So I'm kind of doing double the distance, whereas just an immediate charge, I'm just charging. So how can V2G not be degrading my battery more than just running an immediate charge?
Yes. So this is caused by the calendric aging, which also depends on the state of charge. And many people charge their car to 100% immediately after plug-in. And when they are seldom drivers, let's say, they have an average SOC very close to 100%. And that's not very good for the calendric aging. Mm-hmm. And we can avoid this. But via V2G, it's avoided because we normally do not want to reach this 100%. We do not want to be full. And we are also having algorithms that punish extreme SOCs. So we are only going in the area of 100% if it's a very valuable trade. Mm-hmm. And therefore, we can help to reduce calendric aging. But we add cycles and therefore cyclic aging.
Okay.
But again, we are talking about different C rates than in stationary applications. So we do not have a C rate of 1, but we have 11 kilowatt of charging in Germany normally, and a battery often above 50 kilowatt hours. So the charging power is very low, and therefore also the thermal stress for the battery is very reduced. Okay. And it's very well, the thermal management in a car is also good.
And C rates, would you mind just explaining what a C rate is to someone outside of the battery industry?
Mm-hmm. So the C rate compares the power to the capacity of the battery. So a C rate of 2 would mean that I have 2 times the power as compared to the capacity. Mm-hmm. So okay. I can discharge the battery in half an hour with a C rate of 2, or in 2 hours with a C rate of 0.5.
Perfect. Okay. This was a really good kind of look into the vision and the future of kind of what we see in EVs. And I'm aware that we've kind of skipped over a little bit of kind of actually who Mobility House are and who you are. And so I'd love to kind of let's cover that. So who are Mobility House? What have you done so far, and how do you fit into the Mobility House business?
So we talked about Zero, the vision, and the company was founded with this vision already 2009. So that was very early for this vision, to be honest. So there were no EVs, and also the value of flexibility was limited, let's say. And therefore, the company had some journey of building infrastructure in charging. So we really made our name in charging hardware as well, and end-to-end solutions for big electric fleets, electrification. So we have the biggest online shop in the German-speaking region, and a product called Charge Pilot that enables charging at sites with many chargers and limiting the power necessary as a grid connection power, for example. Mm-hmm. And around this product, we built many different products like billing and end-to-end solutions.
And just to talk about that Charge Pilot, like when you say it's a product, like what actually is it? Mm-hmm. What's the thing?
You can imagine it as a Raspberry Pi sitting in your electric installation, talking via Ethernet to all your chargers, and then being able to control charging of all these chargers and measure the energy and manage things for mm-hmm. you and visualize things for you as well.
Mm-hmm. So like one of the biggest costs, we did a really good episode last week on EV charging. Mm-hmm. And one of the biggest costs that we were talking about came from this kind of need to sign up to have a big power connection to the grid. And so potentially one of the things that you might be able to do is to better manage how, say, 10 or how 50 chargers draw power from the grid, so that you're charging, so that the cost from having that connection to the grid could be slightly lower.
Exactly. And that's a very important topic and has huge CapEx impact. So sometimes it's hundreds of thousands of euros we are saving with this solution. For example, big sites like the Schiphol Airport in Amsterdam, where we charge the electric bus fleet, or also the Irish Post or the Austrian Post. So the very big fleets we are helping with our product to reduce significant costs. And obviously this is the first step towards the vision again. So we can reduce the costs of installing the infrastructure to be able to charge. But then we have already the capability to change the charging behavior. So if there is flexibility left after we reduce the max power at the grid connection point, we can use it for shifting to cheap times, or even use it in a closed group loop solution in the short term trading, mm-hmm. and making revenue with this flexibility given.
It's always a plus. And and just to talk a little bit about how sort of Mobility House fit into the space, right? So with these projects, you have your grid connection that gets designed, installed, someone will own the EV charging point. Potentially there might be a fleet that connects to that EV charger. There might be individual private cars. There might be from a range of kind of manufacturers. It feels like one of the most crucial things that you've done is work very hard on your partnering. So you're sort of up to speed, or you're happy to connect to various different EV chargers, various different cars. Was that something that you saw from 2009 and said, actually, if this is all going to be a success, we have to be sort of real experts in partnering across that EV chain? Mm-hmm. Or is that something that you've learned over the last 10, 15 years?
No, I also think it's an idea of our product development these days to be agnostic and to use the standards that are there. So there is OCPP standards for the communication with the charger, and we are supporting this communication protocol that is very common, and therefore we can work with many different manufacturers on the charging side. And the EV to charging, there is a standard and it's very dominant. It's type 2 or CCS in the fast charging environment. So there we only support one technology, more or less, at least in Europe.
Yeah. So CCS, learned this last week, that's the charging cable that you would plug into your vehicle, and is pretty much the one of the two main charging options that you have. And you also mentioned OCPP, which is the communications protocol.
Exactly. And it's a communication protocol between the backend and the charger. It's often used by the CPOs, the charge point operators. So mm-hmm. then it's a cloud to charger communication. In our case, we also have a local device that makes us independent from internet connection or disturbance outside. So even if there is no internet, all the system works very fine and controls the charging.
And so I think hopefully the thing that listeners are getting from this is that in terms of actually being able to build something into an EV charging ecosystem or working with EVs, like your ability to be able to partner with the general varieties of equipment that's out there and be building things that are standard and very much to protocol is a really important part of how you actually can grow your business to be like an important part of that EV space. So just talking a little bit more about then how you have developed your solution from 2009 through to today.
Yes.
Like what's different?
I think one key step was in 2015 or something, our founder, Thomas Raffiner, he was visiting Mercedes and the Tesla batteries of the Smart came back, of a test fleet, I think. And they, there was a discussion somehow that they wanted to throw it away, so they didn't have a use for it. And he said, hey, we can build a stationary application from this. And they were very fast in the decision making and building the first storage together with Mercedes-Benz Energy as an integrator. And then we had the first stationary storage built from EV batteries. By now it's more than 5,000 batteries. We are operating like this with more than or close to 100 megawatt of power in France, Netherlands and Germany. And this stationary commercialization is really a very valuable basis today for generating value with the flexibility that lies in charging and discharging. So that's the energy side, I would say, the nucleus where it really started off.
Yeah. And actually, this would be a good chance to talk about EVs and sort of second life batteries being used. Because for me, we kind of see both sides of this, right? So you see EVs that come out of being electric vehicle and immobility, and then they could be used in a sort of second life as stationary storage. That's definitely one application. But you also have like this hyper competitive space where people like CATL are kind of announcing lower costs of batteries. They announced something recently that was sort of down at $60 per kilowatt hour for just the cell. So not the whole just for the cell, which is an incredibly low price and potentially driven by a little bit of supply and demand economics and a bit of a flood of cells onto the market. But like how do kind of second life EVs compete with those prices? Because for sure, people like CATL and other manufacturers will continue to push that price down. So, so do you see the kind of second life EVs being kind of worth the effort to put into stationary storage?
It's complex to answer this question because things change a lot. So at the moment, I'm not very deep into this topic, but something changed in the recycling. So the manufacturers are striving towards recycling batteries. So they might be not so interested in the second life approach because they need to get up their recycling rate.
Right.
So, okay. But it's a bit far away from my expertise. I'm not so confident in this.
We have some similar things that go on within the UK, and it's certainly the recycling is kind of becoming a much more important part of being able to produce and put EVs out into the market. So yeah, I can see that happening.
But before, for example, in 2015, it was not possible to recycle the batteries, so it would have gone to thermal recycling, so it would have been burned most likely. And therefore, it's good to have this possibility to use it in a second life application to also collect batteries and increase the stock for then having a recycling in a later step, maybe.
Yeah.
You have more volume. So the market changes a lot, I think. And therefore, also the how cheap we get the batteries for building the stationary applications has many dependencies.
Yeah, and I think that's kind of the things you've touched on there. So EVs not being able to recycle them, okay, they come out, they go into second life. As soon as you're actually able to recycle them to say maybe 95% and it becomes mandated for people to hit that rate, all of a sudden second life as stationary storage becomes less clear and perhaps a more complicated picture. And then as you say, like in terms of getting things like nickel, manganese and cobalt back out of the system, very expensive materials and things that you want to get back out of the system.
Yes.
So you were talking about some essentially like heat-based recycling, which is one part, but I know there's a lot of innovation in this space, and it's actually something that for a future guest on this podcast, it would be great to get someone on who is a huge expert in the recycling space, because we'd love to talk about it. So
maybe one more topic to mention there, because we are not only using second life batteries, we are also using zero life, we call it, so batteries that are not yet in the car. So it's when you have batteries on stock, you need to manage the SOC, because they have a self discharge. So what we do, we connect them electrically, but we not only stabilize the SOC, but we use the batteries to commercialize, and we can earn money with it in frequency containment reserve. And this frequency containment reserve, if you do it in a way that without a lot of trading, for example, then it really is very good for the battery to limit degradation. And yes, these batteries can still be built into cars and sold as new.
And just so I understand what a zero life battery is, so that's a battery that has been built and is ready to go, but is sitting on site at a factory that's not yet into an EV. It will go into an EV, but you're finding a niche where you're able to cycle that battery before it goes and starts its life as an EV.
Exactly. Yes.
Wow, I didn't know that existed. So you learn something new every day. I mean, how big is that market?
It's limited in size. I think in the beginning it was more relevant, because when you built or designed a car and then you bought the batteries in Asia somewhere, you couldn't be too sure that you get the right cells or the right battery packs in a later step. Mm. So the OEMs, the producer of cars, they needed to have this stock to make sure that they can repair the cars of their customers. Mm-hmm. Even though the supply chain is not secured, maybe.
And I suppose it would almost be a nice thing for them as well. So if you have a battery that you've tested for, say, 10, 20 cycles worth before it starts life, you can say, oh, I know that battery works. Whereas if you're taking a battery from an OEM, testing it once or twice, maybe you might not be finding a fault. And the one thing you don't want to do is to put an EV out there that has a fault very soon. So additional testing sounds like it's probably a worthwhile thing alongside providing the frequency services.
Yes, for sure. So when you work with old batteries, second life batteries, you have different technical concept, because you need to be aware that the batteries are not all as equal as all the batteries coming new from the factory, from cattle. Mm. So that's a different concept from the technical side. Yeah, when you build it up new, exactly, you sort, for example, based on the SOH or the internal resistance, this topics you have to have in mind. And I think also what we did there helps us to be able to operate batteries that degraded already. So many of the companies today, they have new batteries. They do not know how batteries behave when they are in a later SOH stage. And mm-hmm. we have this experience already today.
SOH, would you mind explaining that for the non-battery listener?
So SOH is a state of health. So it describes the initial capacity, usable capacity to the usable capacity after degradation. Mm-hmm. So SOH of 80% means I have 80 kilowatt hours usable of an initial 100 kilowatt hour battery.
Great. Okay, that was super useful to run through. If we could maybe actually take a step back, and it's nice to have a guest on from Germany. And so it'd be nice to be able to check in and see how the transition is going within Germany. So we see a lot of trends within the UK and in the US in terms of reduction of gas running hours. Coal, not so much in the UK, it's not really a thing anymore, but obviously for Germany it's a massive part of the history of your energy market, but also how the transition is happening. It'd be great just to get a feeling of where that transition is, kind of what are the key things that are going on, and perhaps some of the biggest risks and opportunities in the space.
Mm-hmm. So I think Germany was pretty early to starting off with the renewables. But in the last 20 years, we had some ups and downs. So there were phases where we really increased fast our renewables, and then phases where we were very slow. And this was very challenging for our industry. So I heard that just the last big PV manufacturer in Germany gave up. And we had a very big industry once upon a time. Mm. So there's challenges with this waves of building renewables in Germany. But at the moment, or the last year, we reached the 50% mark. And that's, I think, a great success story. That 50% of all the energy consumed in Germany came from renewable production. And it's not a lot of stress in the system due to this renewables. So 50% with the liberalized energy market that we have, with the short-term market, the tenders for the ancillary services, a rather good grid, I would say, as compared to other regions in the world, is no problem at all from a stability perspective.
Yeah.
What you need to make sure is that you are not dependent on the fossil power plants in terms of grid services, but with stationary applications, I think that's the perfect fit on the normal TSO services, at least.
Exactly. I mean, it's what we've seen in the UK is that if the stationary battery storage dominates the frequency response market. And it's not really a surprise that it does that. It's very good at responding quickly, whereas big thermal units require time to be able to shift, to move, to respond to those services quite quickly, and storage has been able to undercut them. Let's go back into the space of mobility and EV. So you're active across a wide range of European markets, but you're also a little bit into California as well. Could I ask you kind of like what does in terms of those markets, like what does best in class look like for mobility? Which are the markets that you love being part of because you can be really effective?
So I'm looking into the German, the French, and starting to look into the Great Britain market. And the German and the French market are rather similar in the general concept, but the devil lies in the details. So for example, in Germany, you are not allowed to trade into the imbalance market. So imbalance is something you need to make sure to use as, to be as balanced as possible by regulation. And that's different than France. And I like the German concept of having a wholesale market where all the flexibility need is pushed into, because it's more transparent than the imbalance market. So if you are able to trade into the imbalance market, for example, the players who have the possibility to participate in secondary control reserve are more aware of imbalance in the system and therefore have a better view on the pricing. So it's harder for newcomers to enter the market, I think. So I'm really a fan of this short-term wholesale market. Mm-hmm. On the other side, in France, we have concepts that we will have in Germany, I'm pretty sure, in the upcoming years. For example, the capacity market. And that's very nice for batteries as well, because we can provide a service, this power we have to the system, and earn capacity revenues. And yeah, also help the system to live without the peakers or the conventional power plants. And yeah, in UK, my feeling is, but you're the expert, that things are pretty dynamic and you have a lot of changes in regulation, but you have all the services on the different levels. So TSO services, DSO services, trading. So I'm really looking into diving deeper into the UK market together with the Mobility House.
Yeah, yeah. And I think if there's one thing the UK has been very good at for its energy market, it's kind of being innovative in terms of the products and how much we're pushing to open up frequency response markets and reserve markets to things like battery storage. And we are 100% seeing, as consumers in this market, we're 100% seeing the benefit of actually having things like storage, being able to provide the services that thermal generation was providing for many years. One interesting thing on the capacity market, we have a capacity market. In fact, it cleared moments before we started doing this podcast. So exciting newsflash. And
with very high prices. So
yeah, I think 65 to £70 per kilowatt. So yeah, I think a reasonably high price. But before you count your chickens, the battery market in batteries in the capacity market in the UK have something called derating. And so effectively, and we are going off topic, and I'm supposed to be asking the questions, not you. So, I've started, so I'll finish. So the capacity market, the way that it works is that it works out the contribution of each of the systems to meeting potential periods where the grid doesn't have enough generation. And so because the grid has lots of 1-hour and 2-hour systems, effectively the capacity market, instead of getting £65 or £70 per kilowatt, you actually get a derated number, and it's more like 10% or 15% of that, because the grid says, ah, we have lots of one-hour systems, we have lots of two-hour systems. And it's weird, it's creating this really different dynamic. So what's happening is that you're getting these really big payments going out to gas turbines because they're always available, but they don't run very much. And the storage that's working quite hard to keep the system balanced is getting a very small capacity payment. And I don't know what the answer is, but I am sure that this will kind of evolve as we get into a more net zero system, because I think, you know, you should be paid fairly for the capacity and flexibility you provide to the system.
Yes, maybe there is some best practice. In France, for example, I think they differentiate between participating in short-term trading and participating in frequency reserve. Mm-hmm. So when your asset is limited in capacity, like a lithium battery normally is as compared to gas or coal power plants, then it's better to go to frequency control reserve in times, in the relevant times for the capacity market, because then your power is value, has a higher value as compared to trading, where the capacity limits are having an effect on your availability for the system.
Mm-hmm. Okay, and just in terms of then, I think one sort of final question from me is around what the future of power demand looks like. So very soon I'll ask you if there's anything you want to plug in and for your contrarian view, which I'm excited to hear. But before we go into that, I'd like to get your view on the kind of future of power demand. Do we think that with more sort of V1G, more V2G, the future of power demand is very flat and very sort of non-spiky? Or do you think that sort of consumers will be consumers, and when I get home and I want to plug in my car, I will plug in my car and I will charge it as fast as possible? What do you think the future looks like?
Yeah. Maybe first have a look on the theory side a bit. So Germany strives towards 15 million EVs in 2030.
Okay.
That's equal to, every EV has a charger with 11 kilowatt, that's equal to 165 gigawatt of charging power.
Wow.
So that's huge power. So in Germany, I think the base load is in the area of 50 gigawatt. Mm-hmm. So if you would imagine all these cars being charged at the same moment, it would be infeasible, of course. Mm-hmm. But cars are having a high probabilistics or statistics behind them, because they are very small in size and there are many, and people are very different, cars are very different, charging situation is very different, and they are standing around 95% of the time, and therefore there is not a big challenge, I think, on a global scale for the energy system. But there will be distribution grid areas where you have challenges and where you need to have some solution to limit the power. In Germany, we just introduced, it's called paragraph 14a in German terms, yes.
Yeah.
And it means that the DSO has the possibility, if there is a grid congestion, to limit the power to 4.6 kilowatt. And I'm pretty sure this is a step that will limit the real grid challenges to a really, really, really minimum in the DSO level.
We saw something similar in the UK, actually, of the grid operator wanting to limit the output from solar generation in peak summer. So where we were getting constraint problems, they had the ability to step in and kind of provide that.
Yeah.
But if I can kind of sum up the beast you're making about EV, you're effectively saying that with the sort of 15 million EVs, albeit some won't be plugged in and some will be being used and some will be fully charged and the person won't want them to be sort of used for V1G or V2G, you're saying that with the flexibility that you have there, so 165 gigawatts versus a kind of 60 gig-ish system, you think that there's effectively a much more smooth energy demand in the future because people will be flexible with how they charge their systems.
So this was rather describing the problem state. That was a problem statement. So I already think that without managing it a lot, it's not a big issue. Mm-hmm. Then you have some grid restrictions and you can limit power. That's reasonable. But what with the things we do, so to commercialize flexibility, it will lead to a situation where the batteries really help the system. It's not the EVs bringing additional challenges, but resolving challenges. So these batteries in 2030 in Germany, the 15 million, they could charge the PV energy and they could discharge in a way to completely cover the whole load of Germany in the complete night. So even in a situation without wind, we will have a smooth consumption, or we can take the PV peak and we can feed back to cover the whole load. And I think that's really impressive. So when we do things right in regulation, the technology is there, we can have this huge flexibility and distributed flexibility. So we can resolve DSO challenges and TSO challenges and really integrate renewables with this system.
Yeah, I think it's a fascinating space where there's just so many solutions that seem like they are possible, provided we get the setup from a regulatory point of view and we're able to kind of enable them. So to move on to kind of the final two questions of this podcast. So is there anything that you would like to plug?
Yes, thanks for the chance. So V2G, we talked about V2G and it seems always far away. But this year, Renault and Mobilize, that's the energy brand of Renault, powered by the Mobility House, will launch the R5. It's just launched on YouTube, etc. I saw yesterday. And it will be a V2G car, not only on the paper, like many of the V2G cars driving around today, but there will be a charger available from Renault. And you will be able to discharge this car not only into your home, but also into the public grid. And with our energy tariff, we provide together with Mobilize, you will be able to charge for free if you have sufficient time of plug time as compared to your driving distance. And yeah, we will make this available in the end of this year in Germany and France, and 1 year later in Great Britain.
Okay, exciting times in the V2G space. Having covered that at length, I think it's exciting to hear it actually being delivered in practice. So good to see. And then could I ask you for your contrarian view, something you believe that 90% of the market doesn't?
Yeah. So in Germany, we have a challenge that the regulation really gives a lot of incentive to optimize behind the meter. And I'm not a big fan of behind the meter optimization, because we use all this flexibility, for example, provided by solar battery systems behind the meter, and waste the flexibility for individual optimization instead of using it in front of the meter. So I'm really always pushing and striving towards a regulative system and an incentive system, which enables us to not make the same mistake with V2G. So that not all these batteries are only used to have a behind the meter optimization, but that the whole society can profit from this valuable asset.
Mm-hmm. Just from a systems perspective, if everyone tries to solve their own equation behind their own meter, so meeting their own demand from solar and battery, then we as a whole network will have to invest much more to get that done, rather than what you're saying, which is actually, if we're already transparent and we connect up all the dots, then we could do this at a lower cost.
Yes, I'm sure.
I think so. There will probably be a lot of behind the meter people who might say, actually not. Brilliant. Okay, well, look, thank you very much for coming on, for taking us through all things EVs, mobilities, and the future of energy, particularly via a journey to Germany and France as well, which I think our listeners will have found fascinating. Raphael, thank you very much for coming on.
Thank you for having me. It was my pleasure.